case number 17 in the Book of Serenity is called Fayen's Hair's Breadth. You may have heard the Song of the Trusting Mind by the third Chinese ancestor begins, "The great way is without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. When longing and aversion are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart." So this third line is the topic of this koan. Make the smallest distinction and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. The smallest distinction, literally in Chinese, is like hair's breadth difference. The distinction of like that much, a hair's breadth, the width of a tiny hair, is as the distance between heaven and earth. What a great statement. What is this hair's breadth difference, this slightest discrepancy that the third ancestor is talking about? I think we could see it in different ways, like longing and aversion, holding preferences. In Dogen's Fukan Zazengi, he also quotes the same line in talking about Zazen. Our translation, I think, is yet if there is the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. So it was many people saw this verse of the trusting mind as a kind of pointer. The least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. I think it's a great pointer for a day of sitting. This is a nice reminder of Zazen while we're sitting quietly and settled on the breath and in the body and the present moment, body and mind resting in one suchness. We could speak of that as like heaven. At such a time when we're just one with our experience, we're not separating from our experience, it's like there's no problem, right? There's no issue. And the slightest deviation from that, which I would call the slightest deviation, is basically like conceptual thinking. We really get to notice this, yeah, in a day of sitting. Maybe we don't get any breaks at all from conceptual thinking, then we can't really tell the difference. But sometimes we're just really settled, even for a moment or two. Just relaxed, settled, present, awake. And then the slightest blip of, oh yeah, but what about, or whatever, right? The thought arises and then it's earth. I think it's maybe one way to look at this difference between heaven and earth, the spacious freedom of just being one with our experience, and the kind of worldly earth of just our usual thinking, assessing past and future mind. Maybe one way to see that slightest distinction from one with our experience, because this conceptual thought is like a separation from our experience, we can really get familiar with this, how this works in a day of sitting. Immediately, it's not so relaxed. The body, there's more tension now. The mood shifts. Things become solid, and flowing water freezes. And I think another way we could also see this difference between heaven and earth. Because this way of talking is a little bit dualistic, right? To say heaven is when we're just one with our experience, and earth is like this, you know, clunky, things not quite right realm. Maybe that's a little bit like, well, isn't that making a distinction, actually? So I think another way to hear this is, actually, heaven and earth, there is no separation between heaven and earth. Between this, you could say, being one with our experience is always the case. How could we not be one with our experience, right? And yet, the conceptual mind creates that illusion of separation. Thinking about our past and future are not really past and future, but the mind creates that. And that created illusion is painful. Even if it's a pleasant thought about the past or future, for me, it seems a little bit painful compared to just completely resting in this present experience. It's a little bit like veering off from the reality of this. So we could hear this the difference between heaven and earth is an illusion. And the slightest discrepancy from this reality where heaven and earth are not separate, that seems to separate them. Does that make sense? Can you follow that? It's like our thinking mind creates this duality of like, it's good to be totally settled and no thoughts arising, and it's bad to be just like caught up in the past and future and obsessing about things. That's the big distance now between heaven and earth. Whereas the more we're settled with our experience, the more we can open to the reality where conceptual thought doesn't have to actually disturb the way things are. If we don't reify it, if we just settle in our experience and, there's the future coming up, but we don't go with it, we don't fall into it, but we're just, yeah, that's just the manifestation of the whole works right now is thought about this evening. There's no difference between heaven and earth. But if there's the slightest discrepancy, the slightest distinction, then heaven and earth are said infinitely apart, right? You could say then the ultimate and the conventional are said infinitely apart. Just, pure non-thinking suchness and conceptual elaboration are ripped apart, and then we want this one and we don't want this one. So that's a more subtle way of looking at the difference between heaven and earth. And what is then that, therefore, the slightest discrepancy, that hair's breadth deviation, would be believing that these two truths are truly separate, believing that the appearances of thought are really like a blockage to the emptiness of everything. We can explore various hair's breadth deviations. So, the ancients in China felt like this verse, often the first verse too, the great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences. There's many koans where just that line is brought up. How is that possible? They say. There's like, I think, three different cases in these koan collections where Jiaozhou is interacting with different monks around this first line of the Trusting Mind song. And here it's this third line. The introduction to this case, case 17, called Fayan's Hair's Breadth. Or we could say Fayan's Smallest Distinction. The introduction says, talking about these two Zen ancestors talking. Poetically, it says, a pair of solitary wild geese flap on the ground and fly up high. We're going to hear about Fayan and Shushan, a pair of solitary wild geese. They flap on the ground of earth and they fly up high in heaven. A couple of mandarin ducks stand alone by the bank of the pond, or on the ground on the shore of the vast ocean. Leaving aside for the moment the meeting of arrow points, what about when a saw cuts a scale beam? So this image is used in the verse here too, about like a scale that weighs something, right? It's like perfectly balanced, but if you put a slight bit of something on one side, it tilts and is like thrown into confusion. So there's this equilibrium of samadhi, we might say, or being one with our experience, and then the hair's breadth deviation. So this is brought up later, the scale beam. Leaving aside for the moment the meeting of arrow points. How wonderful. What about when a saw cuts through the scale beam that's like measuring, cutting through that whole thing? I think these ancestors had this amazing poetic sense of playing with these images. So here's the case. Fayan asked Shushan, and these were like Dharma brothers that practiced together with Ditsang. Fayan asked Shushan, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. Or in our translation, when we chant this song, he would say, Fayan asked Shushan, quote, make the smallest distinction and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. How do you understand this? A hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. How do you understand? And I hear this first question, I think, uh-oh, this is a very difficult. If I was Shushan, I might have just run out of the room right there. How do you understand this? How are we going to get into answering a question like that without like arousing the conceptual discriminating mind? How do I understand? Well, let's see now. Already we're like completely lost in confusion. Right? How do you understand this very subtle and obvious point? Because understanding usually involves discrimination. A hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. How do you understand? Shushan courageously replied, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. And Fayan pushed him a little bit more, though. Well, how can you get it that way? And Shushan, again, without running away, said, I am just thus. I'm just like this. Okay? How about you? And Fayan said, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. Shushan bowed. That's the story. Yes.
So the second guy kind of implying, you know, that each of them are speaking about, you know, the first guy says, but how about you? And he's saying that there is this hair's breadth deviation between him and...
That's interesting.
In other words, that, you know, one can say that they're kind of all the same Dharma body, and yet this hair's breadth deviation is two seemingly unique beings. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't even thought of it that way. I think that's the dynamism of these Zen koans, is they're just an eggplant sitting on the table. And then we can like see it from all these different, angles and it tastes differently to different people. And, I think that's one dimension of this, actually, because it's definitely about this subtle relationship between these two people. How are we going to, as is usually the case in these Zen stories, how are we going to, like, express ourselves to each other in this way where we don't get caught in our usual discriminating mind? How can we speak? How can we use words in a very direct way that doesn't get caught in the words? I think this is the particular genius of the Zen family style. Not being afraid of words and not using words in the usual way that chop everything up into bits and pieces. So again, Fayan asked Shushan, a hair's breadth difference is as a distance between heaven and earth. How do you understand? Shushan said, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. Just repeated it. And how beautiful. Because it's not adding anything extra, right, to this. It's not saying, well, let me tell you, let me explain it like this and that. It's kind of like, this statement is so direct and so all-encompassing, and there's no problem with saying it. How do I understand the statement? Just like this. Just like you said it. And I'm not going to add anything to it, and I'm not going to subtract anything. Like subtract might be like, I'm just going to sit here silently. That might be a nice... Sometimes they answer that way too. But no, let this statement be. Just as it is, that's how I understand it. Nothing... lacking and nothing extra. And Fayan, maybe this is kind of just testing, right? Maybe he completely approves, like, perfect. But let's see if we can pull him into discrimination here. Well, how can you get it that way? Well, just to repeat what I just said like that? Come on, how can you get it there? Are you going to elaborate on this? Is my questioning going to tempt you into some kind of defense or explanation or doubt? And Shushan, quite beautifully answers, I am just thus. I'm like this. This is my full expression. Might sound like I'm just repeating you, and it might sound like you're just repeating the third ancestor. But I am just like this, actually. I am just thus. We might say, my answer was just like that. But we might even say, that answer was a long time ago. Like at least half a minute ago. It's long gone. Now, I am just like this. Now I'm just thus, period. I think that's a... It feels like this courageous statement. It feels like this, it's not defensive, and it's not ashamed to be this person, right? He can even say, I, right here, okay? It's okay. I'm here. This is me, just like this. No problem, nothing like, I'm not embarrassed about being a sentient being. What about you? I'm just like this, I've given my answer. How about you? How would you get it? And Fayen also says, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. So I see this relationship too, of like a little bit. Maybe he didn't have, when Fayen was first pushing his Dharma brother a little bit, maybe he was like, I'm gonna kind of get the better of him here. Maybe I'm gonna like see if I can trap him. And when he wasn't trapped, and just kind of put it back on the questioner, maybe Fayen wasn't expecting that. But I almost feel like his response was, it's okay to actually say the same thing that I was just pressing my friend here about. It's kind of like ready for the big answer to kind of maybe win the debate or something. It's like, no, actually that was complete. That was, how could we say anything more, actually? A hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. And Shushan bowed, which usually means like, I approve of our conversation. As the commentary says, when Shushan answered, he didn't fall into speculative thought. He just said, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. He quite evidently had the relaxation of mastery, but then Fayen, after all, didn't accept him, but said, well, how can you get it that way? This is why he was the fountainhead of the Fayen stream, which maybe means that we're gonna get right into the heart of this matter. We're not gonna like, let's not let each other off the hook easily. Here, let's really like get to the bottom of this conversation. Instead of like, repeat back the answer and like, great, it's a dialogue. I bet that'll end up as case 17 in the Book of Serenity. And maybe he thought, no, actually, if this is gonna last for 1,000 years or so, let's keep going a little more. The commentary also says, this is why it is said in ancient times, quote, it is the same way as ever. When you meet someone and talk about it, it becomes confusing. Everything is always just thus, but when we meet and talk about it, it becomes confusing. Then the verse that celebrates this case says, when a fly sits on the balance, it tilts. So this is the image again of this scale beam. Everything's weighed out equally. There's no holding any preferences here. But when a fly lands on one side of the balance, it tilts. The balance scale of myriad ages shows up unevenness. On an image, this balance scale of myriad ages, in other words, this equilibrium from beginningless time, everything is always in perfect balance. But when a fly sits on one side of this ancient balance scale of myriad ages, it shows up unevenness. pounds, ounces, drams, and grains. You see them clearly. But after all, it finally reverts and gives up to my 0 point. Or it finally reverts and gives up to my fixed indicator. The word fixed here is the Chinese character for samadhi. Sometimes the word samadhi is translated as like fixed or stable. That's one meaning. It seems like that's the way the Chinese picked up on translating samadhi. It's like one-pointedness. Literally in Sanskrit, it's more like one-pointedness of mind and object. But the Chinese chose this character that means like totally like fixed or settled and completely stable, which is another dimension of one-pointedness.
So,
yes.
How does the fly get outside of this endless, this eternal balance, this ultimate nature? How did it ever to land on it?
Yeah, how? Well, I would say it didn't really. But it does appear to get outside, doesn't it? Doesn't it seem to knock off the equilibrium? It seems to. I don't feel in balance, something's off. So I'd say the fly doesn't really leave. It can't get out, nothing can get outside of it, right? By definition. Nothing can actually get outside of it. And yet, how does it appear to? That is a miracle. It's a miracle, I would say. the illusion of a fly can step outside of this beam and then tilt the beam. That an image on a mirror can appear to like separate from the mirror. And scratch the mirror. It can't really. And how does it do that? In a way, I think it's the miracle of human life.
It's the miracle of the two truths.
Yeah, and the miracle of the two truths, yeah. It's the miracle of like the Big Bang. I could even say, right? Before the Big Bang, it was just thus. And then, why was there a big bang? Just so we could, like, talk about this stuff, maybe. Eventually, it would take some billions of years to evolve to the point where, I think, you know, we could say the Big Bang was the birth of duality, but then it took several billion years to really get into duality and like construct whole world systems and create Buddha Dharma and one day sittings and collections of koans and translating them into multiple languages and it's the beauty of human life and it's the pain of human life and we could say when there's not even a hair's breadth difference between the fly outside the scale and the fly inside the scale, like when we can just live in this world without truly believing that the fly has separated from the scale, then it's the beauty of life, and it when we. Feel like, no, the fly really has left the scale, and now it's landing on it, and it's messing it all up. That's the pain of life. Isn't it? Yes.
I don't know if you want to follow this thread, so please decide.
The thread of the fly?
Of something you just said, which is a little
sure.
not necessarily to the point, but you were, when you were talking about the Big Bang in such a way, it sounded to me like you were kind of positing it as the beginning of causes and conditions, not within causes and conditions.
Well, now we're getting into like science and stuff, so I mean, that's a great question of like, if we started applying the Buddha Dharma to the Big Bang theory, right? What's going on there, right? Yeah, was there a beginning point of causes and conditions? Yeah, I think that's one way that my limited understanding of the, you know, modern science and quantum physics and all this, I think some people, no one can really talk about this in a way that doesn't defile it. But and I understand one way would be like, there wasn't anything before that. There wasn't, almost like there weren't causes and conditions before there was a universe, right? Because you could say, well, where are they happening? Where are they playing out if there's no universe? But we could say, I think this is like, when we get into this origin of the universe story, I think it's, in a way, it's not a complete distraction. I think it's kind of nice in a one-day sitting to sometimes bring up, like, well, what is the origin of the universe? And of course, we don't know, but just to start contemplating that creates a... It's similar to these koans of like, what was your original face before your parents were born, right? It's like, what was causes and conditions before the universe? We could say is a modern koan.
I mean, my simple response to that is, there is no contradiction because there's no reason to take the Big Bang as the beginning of anything. It's the cycle of birth and death.
Yeah. I think that's true, yeah.
So we don't look for an origin.
Yep. That would be the classic Dharma story about the Big Bang is, yeah, which Big Bang, right?
Yeah, if we don't look for an origin, we see that as a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Eternity. Yeah, and there's world systems being born and dying on this vast cosmic scale, and there's no beginning, you know. Yeah, it's a total mystery. But just to contemplate it a little bit, for me, like, it tunes me into the mystery. That's why I actually think, like, you know, cosmology and especially, like, what do you call it? Astrophysics and quantum physics, too, I think are... people have already made this connection, right? Yeah, and he makes it in our commentary on trust in mind. Yeah. So we're not exactly necessarily saying they're the same thing, but I think when I hear cosmologists talk about these kinds of things, it starts to expand our usual little sense of like, well, it's just like this. It just gets so big. Right. And I think it's maybe why the astrophysicists are drawn to that tradition is there's something even spiritual about it. Right? Yeah. Even though there's no answers, it just creates a bigger perspective. It's the mystery for sure. I think that also those speculations, I would say, are like probably the origins of maybe most religions and spiritual traditions. People starting to ask, what are we doing here? What is this? How did we get here? And what's happening? Is there some meaning behind this? Is there something we're supposed to be doing? Or is it just randomness? Is it a giant cosmic mistake? Is there a supreme, intelligent designer? Is there
life after death?
is there life after death? Yeah, I think all these, when we start to think outside of our usual daily grind, I think religion is born. And then, of course, Zen has the unique perspective of this large cosmic perspective. We take care of that in the careful attention to the daily grind. Maybe other traditions have that too, but I think Zen, maybe more than any, is like, yeah, it's like, you know, I think of that koan, all things return to the one. The myriad things throughout the universe all return to the one. Where does the one return to? And I can't remember which ancestor responded to this, but he said something like, you know, this book I got at Logos downtown. Something like this, right? The one returns to just taking care of like the particular, simple, mundane detail in front of us. The commentary also says, in the heroic march scripture, the Sharangama Sutra, it says, in that self-sustaining, stable state of samadhi, perception and objects of perception, including all forms conceived of, are like flowers in the sky. Just that old Indian image for when you have like cataracts and you're some eye disease where you see like floaters in front of your eye, like things floating there, and they look like they're maybe like something floating in space, but it's actually on your eye. They call that sky flowers in old sutras. So this image, I think that maybe Prajnaparamita sutras came up with that. And Dogen has a fascicle called sky flowers. So it's like it's a nice image for something is appearing, especially as out there, but it's not actually out there. Yes. Is there a sky flower? did you have something to bring up? No. Oh, sky flowers are raining everywhere. Wow. Dogen celebrates them in his sky flowers of emptiness or sky flat. Yeah, the word for sky and the word for emptiness is the same in Chinese and Japanese. So flowers of emptiness or sky flowers. Dogen loves them. That's why he wrote so much. These all forms and objects are like flowers in the sky, fundamentally without any existence. The seeing and its objects are originally the wondrous, pure, radiant body of awakening. How could there be any affirmation or denial there? So, and the commentator says, at this time you don't need to be choosy. You're aloof from like and dislike. There's not a hair's breadth of difference. How could there be separation between clouds and mud? My teacher Tenzin Roshi says about this, commenting on this case, the history of liberation is stories where humans have entered into this conversation and struggled to be present with it as it unfolds. And maybe all of koans are kind of like this, but this one in particular, I feel like, because it's about this issue of this hair's breadth, like, it's so challenging to not separate, even a little bit. So these humans have entered into this conversation, like we're I've entered into it today, right? And struggle to be present with it as it unfolds. Do we have some other business to get onto besides this? Is there any other work for bodhisattvas other than to just be entirely devoted to others in conversation, mutually co-creating the universe? Is there some other work than this? Hare's breadth deviation. We are all very close. All of us are very close. Just a slight adjustment in our thinking and we'll be right on, because you don't have to get rid of your brain. You don't have to have different thoughts than you're having right now. Everybody, the thought that you're having right now, you could wake up with right now. You could wake up right now. When we wake up, it's not that the ordinary mind goes away. The ordinary mind never really was. And in what there never really was is where we practice. And the never really was is happening all the time and never stops. Things that are not really there are constantly appearing, and that's where we practice. Because they're not really there, we don't say, well, this is not really here, so I'm not going to pay attention to this, because this is just trashy old phenomena and illusion. No, we give it our full, thorough attention as though it were really where we are going to practice, as though this is where the lotus is going to pop out. Right here, the mind that looks at what's happening as though the lotus is going to pop out right here, that mind is the mind of the way, or bodhicitta. And there ain't no such thing as any of that. If you are a little bit or a lot confused about that, that is where the way unfolds too. If you're completely clear about it, then you're completely clear that the way is unfolding and you're happy. If you have a little bit of doubt, even with a little bit, then you can be really unhappy. Because a hair's breadth deviation can be a big separation. You can build mountains of pain on that little bit of doubt, that little bit of fudging, that little bit of, quote, I am not going to use this to wake up. Unquote. That was a good one. Yeah, we all have our collections, yeah. Our bags of, I'm not going to use this to wake up. So this is a challenge, right? Especially doubts, maybe like one big like pocket in that bag. At least for me, is like the doubt pocket. You know, like in recent talks about bodhicitta, I was expressing some of my painful doubts. I've been in some pain the last like week around this issue of bodhicitta and feeling like this is impossible. This is painful for me to like, more and more I look into it, the more I feel like, I can see what actually at least some of the tradition is saying is theoretically possible. And I feel like I am like not there. This kind of like impartial compassion for all beings, like their suffering is my suffering equally and equally amongst all of them, in all, not just humans, but all sentient beings in all realms. Like, I would cry at an ant losing a leg in the same way I would cry at my mother dying. It's like, maybe I'm misinterpreting, but I kind of see, it's like, I think this is, maybe it's a very idealized way of talking, but I think, like, from a certain perspective, I can see how, yeah, I could imagine this possibility, actually. I'm just like, my karmic hindrances are like There's a lot that needs to be like worked with before this point, but then a hair's breadth deviation is as the distance between heaven and earth. What are these karmic hindrances and doubts of mine? Where I can feel the pain in them. What is this pain actually? What's the nature of this pain? What's the nature of these obscurations? What's the nature of the separation between me and that ant? It's so close. I appreciate this. I have this intuition. It's so close. And yet, the slightest discrepancy makes it seem like infinite distance. Yes.
Another aspect that comes up for me, which I don't want to idealize, but I recognize it, is the desire not to be enlightened, but to stay in drama, because drama is exciting, it's interesting, it's life. It includes all the passion of theater and music and art.
Well, that I think that's somewhat similar to the one kind of classic way of talking about the bodhisattva vow is I vow to stay. What was the word you used? Life or
drama?
Drama. Yeah, drama. The bodhisattva, I vow to stay in the drama, but not just because it's exciting for me, but I vow to stay in this drama to free all beings in the midst of the drama. So it's like, puts the compassion a twist. It doesn't mean that I don't enjoy it. Because I think part of the way that we're going to free the beings in the drama is to enjoy it with them.
Don't want to give it up.
What's that?
Don't want to give it up. Don't want to give it up to the knowledge that it's all just not real and I'm going to still somehow.
Well, again, this is the subtle, this is like, We can make a big difference between the drama and the reality that's free of drama. And we could say, we have to leave this one to enter this one. And then we've separated heaven from earth. So this is the Mahayana challenge, is like, how do we stay totally in the drama for the benefit of all beings and yet, not really in the drama? At the same time, or there's this term we'll get into more in the Sunday class, I hope, called non-abiding nirvana. Where we're in nirvana, but we're not abiding in it as separate from samsara. Hair's breadth deviation. Yes.
What's been resonating in my mind when I'm talking about this hair's breadth is the identification with the eye sense.
Yeah.
And it's everything that we've been saying begins with the word I feel, the drama, I experience. And that's what it's identifying with, that sense of I-ness that creates this distinction, that as soon as we have that sense, it's separated.
Yep, there it is.
Me, the next question is, well, how do I not identify with the
eye?
That's the real core. How do I mm-hmm. whether I'm sitting, or whether I'm walking, or whether I'm working?
Yep, exactly. And I think you said it well, like, how do I not identify with it? Which doesn't mean get rid of it. And like as Tenshin Roshi said, it's not like we have to remove our brain or something like that. It's not identifying with it, meaning like, it's funny too, because the word identify with the eye sense, identify usually implies like two things being identified, coming together into one. But in this particular case, identifying with the eye sense, I say, is a separation in this particular unique case. Identifying with the eye is like separating the eye from the experience that's happening. Like the experience is happening to me instead of there's just an experience happening. So, yeah, how do we do it? I think that's why we're here today, right? To just completely settle into our experience. And then when the eye sense arises, that's part of the experience. It's like Richard's wonderful image of, does it seem like the eye sense is like this little fly that comes out of side of the scale of myriad ages? The little eye like flies outside. Like, no, it can't. The eye sense can't really like separate from the experience, but it sure does seem to. Yes.
It seems like that pain that you're talking about is precisely the not being with I am thus.
Yeah.
I am thus.
Yeah.
As opposed to the other thing, oh, I should be.
Yep. Yes, right. I am thus. This is how it is, exactly here. Can't be any other way. Let's enter right here, as opposed to let's enter through after like countless eons through this long process. And I think we all have different ways that we get caught. So I think that's a beautiful way you said it is when I am not thus, when I am like trying to be something else, then we're caught. And I say we all have these different ways that I was reflecting on the Enneagram. Y'all maybe know the Enneagram system, personality system. There's these 9 personality types. And I think it's actually a nice system because it's talking about, from the Buddha's perspective, the 4th skanda, you know, of like karmic formations. We all have these unique karmic formations and they're patterns, but they're unique patterns and they play out in like repetitive ways, are unique karmic formations of these 9 types. And you could say they're the 9 different ways that we can be thus or get caught by our particular karmic inclination. You know what I mean? So I can't remember all the different types, but like, so they all have like a healthy side. When you're just completely thus, you are your type and you thrive in it. And there's ways where it gets unhealthy in your type. And I just, in case y'all, if you know the system, if you didn't already notice, I'm quite convinced that I am the Enneagram 1, which is the perfectionist. You're 4? So we have these different ways. So I get caught in like hearing about this bodhicitta thing, like I have to do this. This is like my vow, like, and I'm not going to be content until I do it. And then I suffer when it's off and I'm not. You know, that's the perfectionist suffering. And of course, there's a healthy side of the perfectionist of just go for it, kind of like energy. And I think each of these types has their unique way of getting separating from our experience and getting really like more and more separated, and the way of just being that unique type. And then a perfectionist might look at a different Enneagram type and say, they're really off track. Why aren't they like making more effort? But like, no, that's not their, you know, particular, that's not what they're working with. To find their thusness. This is broad terms, but yeah, I think it helps me to see how our different paths to the one thusness. Yes.
Yeah. So this sort of brought up an image for me. I forget who it was, but I was digging on some lecture, and they were talking about like the balance scale. Earlier, and I don't have a pen on me, but you know, sometimes when you balance a pen on your finger, the balance point isn't like smack dab in the center. Sometimes it's a little further towards one side or the other to find that equilibrium point. And so maybe based on someone's personality or constitutional proclivity, that balance point will be closer to the drama side or closer to the reality side to find that sort of place.
Yeah.
You know, people who are more inclined to like monastic or hermit kind of a lifestyle versus someone who's more into like tantric, let's get crazy and weird, but still stay in mystery and be present.
Yeah. Great point. Yeah. We all have to find our unique balance point. Yes. Last question.
It's just a comment. I really enjoy this, this interpretation of that line, and what the way I'm thinking about it is the difference between, if somebody says the sky is blue, can you explain that?
Yep.
It's so different than, we all know the experience of looking at the sky. That's it. That's enough. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And to go into life and physics and things and everything is like a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Which is a thing, too.
Right? Yeah, but we lose the directness often of the experience. Or to ask, well, what was before the Big Bang? Let's get this panel of scientists to tell us about their theories instead of just, let's just not know. Directly be not knowing, or it is just thus. Yeah, that's like Suzuki Roshi apparently said one time. Something like, when we say this flower is beautiful, we kill it. That's pretty like a radical kind of hair's breadth difference. Because it's nice to say that they're beautiful, but slightly veering off, just completely experiencing the flower beyond any assessment or labeling or conceptual ideas. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit, virtue, and positive aspirations of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.